Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 power cards. My name is Davey, and with me tonight I got Phil and Aaron. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. We got some good stuff to talk about tonight. Before we do, we're just going to hit our usual context. We're coming to you right after Adepticon 2019. Still waiting on those next two warbands. We've got some new boards. It's kind of the latest development along with the updated bar list. As always, thanks to everybody who commented, and thanks to folks who we got to chat with at ACON. That was super cool. If you want to talk to us online, you get us at WTHcast. We're going to talk today about our deck. Specifically, we're going to start with the Godsworn Hunt. We put out a poll, and that was what got voted up first. But before we do that, we're going to catch up with what you're doing in a little segment I like to call, Hey, What You Doing? What about you, Phil?
So like we said, just came back from Adepticon. It was my first time ever going, and it was quite an experience. Super excited to go back. I wish I had planned to be there longer, but we just went for the one day for the Grand Clash. So, definitely have grander plans for next year. Had lots of great conversations with lots of people that we got to meet. Got to play a ton of games and just overall had a really great time. And then on the hobby front, I picked up a few AOS novels to start getting into, and namely picked up the Shadespire one, which I think is called The Mirrored City.
That Josh Reynolds guy, he can write a book.
Yeah, yeah.
So my looking best forward friend.
looking forward to starting in on that too.
It's a good one. I think I enjoyed it independent of the fact that I really like the game that it's tied into. So,
and you know, when you're done reading it, maybe look up the Mortal Realms episode where we cover Shadespire, The Mirrored City.
Yeah, share some of your thoughts about it, that sort of thing. Mm. Myself, obviously, I was down at Adepticon as well. Got to do some cool things. I got to meet Randall from Battle for Salvation podcast. He's out there, and Rob Mead as well, who does their videos. We talked about that last time. And then Aman, who is on his Hexes and Warbands is his blog, and then he's just started a podcast called Path to Glory. That's with Jonathan Davis, I believe, from Wigglehammer. And they've got one episode out. Really enjoyed that. And I imagine they'll have another one with plenty of interesting stuff to hear, because, spoiler alert, Aman did really well. And they'll have some high-flying exploits to discuss from Adepticon. Aaron, what about you?
Well, I'm trying to think of what I talked about last time, but I believe I was working on my Reavers Warband. But now at this point, I've got both the Reavers and Magors assembled. So I can obviously, now that I know Magors is a top contender, it's good that I was able to get that all set up in the nick of time. So I'll put together a deck. I'll tell you what, Phil, maybe I just borrow yours.
That's perfectly valid.
We'll go from there. Yeah.
You did send us a picture of Gartok and the other guy who I can never remember his name.
Zarkus.
I don't say Zubash or Zurash, but yeah, I was triggered just looking at Gartok there. I hate that.
as was designed. Yep. So it'll be nice to maybe try and give those guys a spin.
Cool.
Actually, and a question for Phil, you were saying that you're excited to go back to Adepticon. What do you want to try out next time? Like what's drawing you to, extend your stay?
Pretty much watching Eric from the Mortal Realms crew have such a great time with his AOS stuff, and getting to do the Gibbering Dome, I believe, was their narrative event. Looked awesome. And then just seeing people hanging out, playing some AOS, having a great time. And then obviously more Shadespire Underworlds.
Absolutely. Nice. Well, I'll tell you what, let's make a date. You and me now, we'll go next year.
What?
But no,
what
Davey.
About what?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, with the way Davey's going, who knows if he'll make it to next year.
Wow. All right. Well, I will make it to the rest of this episode, I think. So hopefully, because this one I got to carry the load on here. We're going to cover, the idea is we're going to take one episode each to take a deep dive into our decks. So just have the idea. I thought it'd be an interesting look in for somebody taking a deck sort of from conception to execution. So we'll talk about like the original concept of the deck, how you settled on that faction. We'll break down the objective deck, the power deck, what cards ended up in there, and also maybe some of the cards that we considered along the way, why we didn't take them, or maybe why we wish we did. Some lessons learned in practice, if you got some, and then cover the Adepticon performance. And like I said, we had a little vote in a couple places. Those jokers on Discord voted up Godsworn, but some people were putting in votes for Sepulchral Guard and Farstriders, which was pretty confusing. I think
give the people what they want.
Aaron, why don't you make up an imaginary Farstriders deck that you built and brought, and we'll see.
Perfect. I can't think of anything funny. Cut this out.
No way. All right. All right. So I'll kick it off here. So the original concept of the deck with the Godsworn, and this actually, Phil and I kind of collaborated a little bit on the original idea here, where I first started busting them out just because we thought we were going to do a full episode on the release, and that kind of got overcome by events at this point. But looked at him and I was like, these guys are kind of like Reavers, except they got some shooters, and the javelin and bow seem kind of groovy. Like maybe there's a way to play these with the extra ranged element. And it's not quite, but kind of a combination of factions that I've spent a lot of time with, as in Reavers and Farstriders. I've done a lot of shooting with the Farstriders and done a lot of running around and chopping things with the Reavers. So it felt like a interesting spot to explore and a little bit different. We'd seen Jamie Giblin and a couple of guys in the UK working with one that capitalized on speed, try to end you up in the enemy board at the end. So this was mostly just combat while trying to pick your fights a little bit better using both the speed and the ranged elements. And then I ended up sticking with it just because I was having a lot of fun with it. I realized in retrospect, I think I might just enjoy the game. And so I was conflating, you know, having fun with the faction with just having fun playing Underworlds, but you know, same, I guess. But that was, I think, the core of where we came up with where to go with it. And Phil got to see several iterations of this, but
yeah, plenty of practice rounds. Yeah. Were there other warbands that you were considering before you locked in on Reaver or on Godsworn?
I think I definitively stated that I was going to bring Gitz at some point. Because I was like, I think I'd used Steven Van's Goblins deck, and I was like, oh, this is super fun, and I really want to paint these guys, but got distracted. So never believe me when I say I'm definitely going to do something, I guess, is your takeaway there.
Don't believe you no matter what you say.
Excellent. All right.
Okay, that's my last one. I'm not going to pile on anymore.
I don't believe you. All right. Well, we'll jump in with the objective deck, right? So, like I said, it's pretty offensive oriented. I kind of looked, actually, you know, just to back it up even a little bit, the very original deck I started building was just a joke, like, Grawl deck, do all the weird Grawl stuff. And that kind of settled as I was doing that. I'm like, actually, it's kind of a cool amount of range stuff. But anyway, offensive scores. About half the deck was cards that scored purely off of doing things on offense. Change of tactics is a standby for many offensive decks. It's a easy way to get that glory without, at its most expensive, it's costing you two activations, right? And only one of those is maybe something that you wouldn't have done otherwise, that the one round going on guard. I took one power card to try and help me out with that a little bit. A worthy deed, which was its score immediately if you take a fighter out that has four wounds or more. That felt like a good pick, especially in some of the matchups that might be a little tough, like Magors, for instance, or Molag. I also tend to start out with a lot of faction-specific cards in the deck and then end up weeding a number of them out there. What armor, another sort of easy score, two fighters that can flip to cleave, Shand and Alo. Especially Alo is pretty cool for that because he can take multiple attempts from afar, as opposed to if you've got a fighter with cleave on a combat weapon, you sometimes put it all in like, man, I hope this charge lands, otherwise this card is dead. And the difference being Alo can sit back and keep plinking away until he finally hits. to score it. So those are three kind of more obvious ones. There was Keep Chopping was in there, which has got a little bit of an anti-synergy with Change of Tactics, because if you're having to burn an activation going on guard, then you've unscored Keep Chopping. But they felt strong enough, and it never clashed too often for me. There was Crushing Force, so score immediately if you do double the damage that you need to do to take someone out. And that comboed actually pretty nicely with my last one. This is my probably dark horse inclusion here, is Concerted Attack. And that is score immediately if three fighters make an attack against the same enemy in one phase. And that they don't all, none of, they don't, they could all miss. There's no success requirement there. Phil got to see that a bunch. They kind of made it in a little bit earlier on, and made for some weird activations. But, what I liked is that, especially with the ranged elements, you can score that and Keep Chopping really work very nicely together. And then getting mid round glory off of that, score immediately, which doesn't care whether you missed or not. So if you are forced to take a shot with Alo uninspired, you know, two swords or something like that, then you're still making ground towards this. So I think Phil is pretty similar to like, what's the Magor's charging one?
No escape. It's just make three charges.
Right. That's the one. So this felt pretty similar to that. It only gets in trouble in late game where you might have lost a lot of people and don't have three anymore, or occasionally against, if it's hard to keep piling on the same people, but you have enough kind of small attacks. And it's what I like as well is that you can throw those attacks. You can start with the sort of ranged low commit sort of things. So, you know, take a little arrow shot with Alo to weaken somebody so that you can come in. And then once they've been weakened, then Crushing Force is all the easier to score. So I had some real nice rounds where you'd score three or four of these, score immediately is all one off the other.
Do you ever feel like it's a nice insurance card too, because you can score it without successfully getting those attacks?
Yeah, totally. And it actually helps. And we talked about maybe doing an episode about going on tilt. It helps. You don't, I remember working with the, Let the Blood Flow was the Reaver card where three fighters have to make a successful attack. That one scores you two, but it was much harder because you didn't have shooting unless you included it as an upgrade. And you could get really, really close and just keep missing with that last possibility. So, yeah, this was like, okay, that's fine that missed. I'm still on my way towards getting that mid-round glory, which is crucial for anybody, but I think especially so for the Godsworn. So that'd be the offensive ones. I had three in there that five I'd include as passive. There's Fired Up, something off the restricted there. I was going to say it's real easy for Godsworn to score. I think it's real easy for anybody to score, right? But I don't think... I was never shut out on it. You always found a way to get somebody inspired. Escalation, obviously, I mean, it's good for everybody, especially me, who's really interested in upgrading. Martyred, which is good in a squishy six-fighter warband. And then it really takes this thing out when you can start upgrading people right away because somebody came and kicked... kicked Grawl into a lava pit, and then you're good to go. And then Victory After Victory, Master of War were the other two. Those for scoring other things or doing other things, basically. Now, Phil, I know you'll talk about Victory After Victory some. I found occasionally this was a borderline for me, because it occasionally jammed me up pretty bad if I drew it in hand with other stuff, you know, like... if I drew Victory After Victory and, I don't know, like Keep Chopping, then I had to somehow cycle two, or work my way through two other objectives in the other one. So, I think I occasionally would mulligan into pulling that up and then find myself in a little bit of a bad spot.
Yeah. It's a tough one if you don't have enough of those score immediately.
Right. Or if they drop awkwardly. I think that might have been a matter of not having enough draws or not having enough practice with what are good hands to hold or not, because I would frequently look at that and be like, I don't know if this is going to be good or bad for me. But and then so that counts for 11 of them. I ended up with a third end phase. I put in pure carnage, which is the 7 fighters need to be dead at the end. And that came in pretty late. I was looking at that, especially because I was feeling like between a worthy deed and concerted attack and some of these other ones that were really focused on the high wound fighters, felt like I was maybe focused a little over-teched for things like Molochs and Magors, and might need a little bump against the more numerous warbands. Like, mostly I was thinking here of Ghosts or Gits. And that seemed like, and then it didn't hurt against Magors, since even if I killed 3 of them, there's a good chance that they were going to kill 4 of me, you know. They're usually pretty bloody battles, so. And if you didn't get, yeah, I don't know. The backwards way of thinking about it, I remember a couple times being like, well, if I'm wiped out, I only need to get 1 of them to score this well.
Yeah, but that's 6 glories they got off of you.
That's probably a bad scene. So it's not really for that situation so much as it is to take that real bloody battle where maybe Magors has jumped ahead by having somebody swinging away with a Tome of Offerings try and make up some ground there. So.
Yeah. Are there any of these that you felt like, after having played the tournament, that you think were duds that you probably shouldn't have included?
I was pretty solid on those. It would have taken a little bit of like I said, with victory after victory, I might have looked back in to see if like solid gains or something like that might have been a less ambitious way to go about that. It's worth 1 less, but it feels a little more gettable at times. Like if I'm getting some from kills, it felt like there were more paths to score that. But that there actually a worthy deed where dropping a fighter with 4 wounds actually ended up, and some of it was with my matchups, that ended up being pretty hard to score a couple times. Like I really had to work hard. Like if you're fighting Reavers or Skaven, there's only 1 fighter walking around on the board that you could possibly score it on.
Or Molochs.
Or yeah, Molochs, but my and then right. And then you're saying, okay, well I guess I'm gonna try to kill Molochs. It kinda if you decide that your strategy going forward is to avoid him, then that one's a dead draw. So that felt like it often had me working some less than optimal options. Some other things I included, thought about early on, I tried a few of the oaths. Like I tried Oath of Supremacy and in some of our practice, where if I'd be in a good position if I won the boards and could set them diagonal, you could control engagements, especially with your range fighters. But if they were squared up, then I had trouble scoring much passively. So I thought maybe Supremacy would help out, because I'd end up with extra objectives. But the problem was, like, I would just die so quickly. It was really hard. And you think that you're a 6 fighter warband, but you're not really, because Grawl can't help out with it, can't hold objectives. So
yeah,
that didn't stay in. Oath of Conquest is real good, but not in the way I've built. Other people have built with a lot more movement tech that comes in better. I didn't have hidden paths or spectral wings or that sort of thing to get. So I often was a little bit difficult to get out of my board, just because I was trying to back up, give ground, and take advantage of shooters until I was ready to counterpunch. Tried Oath of Murder a little bit. It was not bad, but felt like I could do better. Miraculous Escape, thought about that for a little while, especially when I was using Dark Destiny, Last Chance, and Rebound. It seemed like there were a lot of ways to make somebody miss, but that's one I wish I'd made room for after all. I think that seemed like a really potentially, I don't know, getting a score immediately when you're someone's already just missed a roll is pretty big.
Yeah.
And then I think Well Guarded was another that I had tried out. It just was too restrictive on positioning, and too, I wanted even more than 6 fighters, and I couldn't. I often needed Thedra to be doing something other than standing back. She's effectively being used as a Grunden light. So,
yeah.
so the power deck, then we'll split that into ploys. And I kind of did the same thing here where I split them into what style they were. So there's the defensive. And like I said, originally I had Dark Destiny, Last Chance, and Rebound. Dark Destiny being basically Last Chance that always works on a 50-50 and prevents the drive back. I ended up at the last minute cutting Rebound. And I guess I'm not exactly sure what my... I think it was... I don't know. It had been effective a couple times. I mean, that's the definition of it, right? Like, it works a third of the time.
Right.
But I thought... Right. I think I just decided I wanted something that I could have on a more consistent basis. And I think I also wanted to... I mean, I don't know. This feels weird to say, but I wanted to avoid that, like, super feel-bad moment for one of the players. Not like, out of a... courtesy, but I don't know, it's just like that you rebound on somebody in the game and it just kind of sours the game a little bit, or someone feels hard done by because they, you know, I don't know,
yeah, they got beat by dice.
Yeah right.
Whose side are you on?
Well, I just figured I could contribute to my own victory without that, and that's not a knock on anyone who includes it. I think it's a great thing to use, but I don't know, I just had a sudden impulse towards the end and yanked it. But
a new nice guy Greg meme, but now nice guy Davey,
right? And then what I replaced it with was Distraction, which is far less exciting of a card, but pretty fun. I mean we have a whole episode about the cool things you can do with it, and I did not feel really any regrets about that. It seemed pretty cool.
Such a strong card.
Yeah, sidestep, especially distraction. I was really leveraging boards that had lethal hexes a lot, just because with the speed and range, I could position in a way to bump people into those lethal hexes or bump them closer to them, and then Distraction can get you that one more. It was frequently what I was looking for, was that just that one little bit more to knock them off. So I was pretty happy with that. I had Inspired Command in there, which is the... From the leader's pack, you can either push a fighter who is not your leader or put a fighter who is not your leader on guard, but it also requires your leader to be alive. So Inspired Command is in there as kind of a sidestep light, with the added benefit that it will allows me to put somebody on guard, and then I can score change of tactics while not messing up my attempt to keep chopping. And some of the cooler moments are when I would draw that, would put somebody on guard. I mean, it's even good just to save an activation for a change of tactics, but you feel really, really smart when you put somebody on guard using Inspired Command, charge with them, and then as part of the score immediately you draw into keep chopping. You're like, oh yeah, like this is stuff. And then, yeah. Well, go ahead.
No, that was it. That was just, yeah. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. And then the other movement was a mirror move. And I think, especially since they clarified, and we had theorized that this might be the case, but since they clarified that it could work off of a drive back, although my guys are light enough that they often died and were not actually driven back, but it was in there some as a way to get around my turn. It's a nice counter to that if you push somebody back and then you can mirror move away. It didn't actually come up. I only saw my turn a couple times. And sometimes it was with Molog, who is still within range. But I anticipated that being way cooler than it was. I think it was just it didn't pop up. It was awesome in practice. But and then offensive, we're Trap and Haymaker. Trap again. It's nice to complement that ranged damage. What feels real good is hitting somebody with a javelin for two, popping them backwards into terrain, and then trapping them to also do 4 damage out of nowhere at range.
Brutal.
Yeah. And then Haymaker, when you're already wearing armor that's a wet paper bag, then it doesn't matter so much if you lose your ability to defend. But I almost always end up using it at the end of the round anyway.
Yeah.
In the obvious category, there's Ready for Action. Enough said. I wonder...
Maybe just to touch on the Haymaker point that you just made there, for people who maybe are not aware, just elaborate on what you mean by you use it at the end of their own.
Sure. Well, so when you use it, whatever fighter attacked no longer gets to roll defense dice for the rest of that round. But if you use it in the last activation or in an activation where, you know, the other side has charged all their fighters already, then you basically don't pay any penalty for doing so.
Sneaky plus two dice.
Yeah, plus two dice with no downside. So I think in my Sepulchral Guard game, I ended up using it in both games of that match. I used it at the end of round one, I believe, for some good effect. I'm ready for action. You know, you love it. Everybody has it. I'm wondering, I'm meaning to look through and see if anybody hasn't taken it. They got the top 10 Akon decks. I would be surprised.
Yeah, I got to imagine.
The number one there. Most taken card, right? Like,
oh, it's got to be.
Yeah. And then card draw or card efficiency, improvisation, and spoils. Spoils being basically inspiration strikes plus for Godsworn. And improvisation, that only made it in after our episode with Steven Van. I think you and I talked about that, where we each put it in our decks and pretty happy with it. How to open things up. So those are the 10 power cards, or 10 ploys in the power deck. We'll hop over to upgrades here. Same thing. I've got real heavy on the offensive here, mostly because that's one of the things I like about playing the Godsworn is there's that moment when you're playing a Reaver deck when that third fighter dies, and all of a sudden you inspire and your range and damage and accuracy jump up on a bunch of your fighters. And although your opponent knows that you inspire at three people dead, I find they often aren't quite doing the math, and it feels like you can do that on a one-by-one basis with the Godsworn, especially if a couple unspent glory, then you can kind of jump out with a surprise. Whoever you most need to do the job that you want can all of a sudden pop into inspired mode. So I took go ahead.
Especially with the Dark Horse factor, right? I mean, yeah. People just aren't familiar with them yet, so you just catch them off guard because exactly. They don't know what each fighter does.
Did you go ahead? Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but did you find that was the case with your games? Like,
yeah, in a couple in particular, I would say I think at least two of my opponents are pretty unfamiliar with Godsworn, and maybe a third. The first Phil Knapp that I played first seemed to kind of have a decent idea of what they were doing, but even then, I think people weren't sure who. You know, it wasn't like I was trying to conceal it or anything, but, you know, it's, I'd kind of run down, these guys get faster, these guys, whatever. But Grundon popping to 5 speed was kind of a big one that came into play a number of times. But also the dog, Grawl, ended up doing some cool things with his increased threat range, surprise increased threat range. So, dropped, let's see, for the offensive, have a Great Strength and Concealed Weapon were the only two that didn't in any way help somebody with a ranged attack. I say that, but you can put Great Strength on Ollo if you're really up against it and need to turn him into a cleave, you know, get that cleave attack activated. I don't think I ever had to, but it's always possible. But then Potion of Rage, Glory Seeker, Challenge Seeker were all damage or dice upgrades that work at range. Fighter's Ferocity was crit for plus one damage. And then Shade Glass Axe was there to give one more range attack. It could sometimes be the difference on scoring concerted attack. If you had a fighter with just a range one and you just had trouble getting right at somebody, if they started running them away, you could run after them and throw an axe at them.
I think in some of our games when we were practicing, it also effectively worked as a sort of surprise damage boost for one fighter, because all of a sudden they could be hitting for potentially four, right?
Sure, yeah, depending. Well, because it goes two crit to three, but it's very frequently paired up with something. You know, they may already have Glory Seeker, or, you know, so it goes it goes nicely with some of these other ranged upgrades. Fighter's Ferocity, it might be 2 crit up to 4 or something like that. Or you can use it up close and use it help out with a great strength and concealed weapon. But mostly I was just throwing that thing. So it's nice to put on Jagathra after she's already thrown her javelin and she looks like she's not going to be able to do anything. She can pick that up and make another long distance throw, especially since she gets quite fast. So it's speed 5. She's got like a 8 hex threat with her javelin or a shade glass axe in hand. So always pretty tasty. Tome of Offerings was a late add, and that actually went in. I think it replaced the javelin. There's a Jagathra's enchanted javelin, which basically gives her infinite javelins to throw. And that seemed really fun and really cool, and I would keep drawing it in the first round when she still had her original javelin, and it was like, well, this isn't actually all that useful for her yet, or later when she was already dead. And it's just a tough warband to include an upgrade that needs to go on a specific fighter, right? Because you want to be able to just not worry about keeping them alive too much.
Yeah, well, and I mean, all of your upgrades serve a dual purpose, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to use them to up or to inspire people. Right. So every one that's specific to a fighter is limiting your options.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one defensive one in there, acrobatic. That's good on everybody except for Sean's, who inspires to shields to blocks. So he was a weird one. You put it on him and then. Guess he'd have to be on guard for it to take advantage. I don't think he ever got too jammed up with it. And then Path to Glory is just a great upgrade. +1 wound, +1 attack dice, as long as you have another upgrade on you. That rounds up the upgrades. On those, I was pretty happy with all of them. I know other people will take some speed stuff if they're looking to also score cover ground or get into enemy territory, but and I played with that a little bit. I'd had cover ground and great speed early on. It'd be fun to jump Grunden up in a hurry. But I was pretty satisfied with where the upgrades landed. Tome of Offerings was just a little sometimes pretty tough to do anything because your guys would die so easily that whoever you put it on maybe would get one glory out of it. But if they get one glory mid game, then I guess that's pretty good. So
it's pretty good. Get one glory off of an upgrade.
Yeah. It's not as good as if it's on Molag, obviously, or some of the fiends or other heavy hitters like Curse Breaker or something like that. But it's pretty decent. So that covers the deck, all 12 objectives and 20 power cards. I would say going into Adepticon, I felt like I was feeling pretty good and then realized that almost all my practice had been sort of Magors and Molag based. And I didn't have a good feel for what happened, like what would happen if I faced a Swarm Warband that was just looking to sit way back. I did a lot of setting boards diagonally to make someone come to me. And I realized that if the reverse was true, I didn't have all that much movement tech. I had some range to help me out, but I started getting worried, and that's where I started adding in a couple other things, backing down, because I used to be heavier against Molags with things like Rebound. So I backed off some of the cards that are only going to help if there people are attacking you, and ended up with how we looked as we described there. And I think that was mostly my feel. I felt good about mostly aggressive matchups, and I thought I'd do okay against Magors, the Iron Jaws, Molags, and I had enough knowledge. I felt like Ghost was a blind spot. I didn't really have a lot of reps against them. I hadn't made it out to play our local Thorns player, Cameron. Like you had, Phil. So
mm-hmm.
I was concerned about that popping up, but rolled in. And my first game of Adepticon match one was Phil from Michigan, and he was playing Reavers. And as we were setting up, I realized that although I knew Reavers pretty well, I didn't have a good handle on that matchup. And it ended up being, because there's a couple of my objectives get pretty hard to score against him. Like, try finding a Blood Reaver that you can attack three times and not accidentally kill him. that ended up being a bit of a problem, as well as that a worthy kill. Garrick's the only guy I can score that on. So, game one, I won board, set us up diagonal, gave him a lava pit to try to run through with that new board. And we had a pretty entertaining moment early on. I had the chance to kill Sick, who charged in and missed. And I came in with somebody doing two damage. It was, I think, Grundin. No, I'm sorry. Thedra tried to knock him into the fire. Did not do damage, but did take a wound off him. Then my Grundin equipped a great strength, ready for action, chopped him, and I was going to score the kill and crushing blow, but then he last chance upgraded, ready for action, killed me back, and I missed my last chance. And then it was go time there. It was a real back and forth. It was fun just to see the two big axe guys just standing next to each other, chopping each other as hard as they could. So we were in a race to the end, and I was behind by a couple points, but I had a great hand. I had fired up victory after victory, which was going to score, and escalation, which was also going to score. So that is it's like a five glory hand. I was like, that's got to be enough to catch up with him. But he seemed pretty confident on his objectives too. And I'm looking, I had two objectives left in my deck, and I knew one of them was pure carnage. I was like, so do I take the 50-50 chance that I go from, it's a 50-50 of going either down to four, stay where I'm at for five if I hold, or go all the way up to seven. As it turned out, he was also scoring pure carnage, and so he had five in his own hand, so we ended up matching. If I had traded out and picked up pure carnage, then I could have tied up this first match. But I went down 16-18, and that was a good example of the best of three. You know, I didn't know what was in his deck. If I'd realized, and I guess I maybe could have anticipated, I didn't have it in my own when I was playing Reavers, but a little bit of a surprise. So, start out match one, game one, going down, but just by a little, pretty high scoring. Roll into game two. This ended up being a blowout where I got to place the boards diagonal again, and I was up like 13-0, and he picked up a few points at the end. I was scoring my own escalation, which got it for him. So, that ended up a 15-4 win. Pretty solidly dice in my favor. And the last game, so the rubber match here, was I lost that one 14-19. He managed to square the boards up, and I held a real bad first hand. I think it had just been a little bit too rusty, hadn't played anything real close other than our one practice, and I had to pay for that. I think I saw ready for action and four good upgrades, and just wanted to believe that I could kill a Reaver and get that ball rolling.
Oh, I've made that mistake before.
Yeah. And you gotta toss it. It feels bad, you know. You discard ready for action. They know they don't have to worry about it anymore. But it was. I should say, for folks who don't know, I was the only Godsworn Hunt player at the whole Grand Clash of the 94 or so, something yep. like that. So. I immediately let people down. People were like, oh yeah, it's awesome. There's, you know, I had people in my corner, and then I started off by losing my first match. So that was a bit of a bummer.
Do you think it was a good matchup for you or a poor matchup?
You know, that's funny. When I came out of it, I was saying that it was a bad matchup. And I don't know. At first I thought, it's a bad matchup. I think part of the problem was I didn't practice it. The things in his favor is that he's scoring, It Begins, Korn Cares Not, and, Pure Carnage. So that's like a baseline six glory that are probably going to get scored every single game with our two light punch up decks. on the flip side, I've got the ranged element, so I can hold back, and he had to run towards me. So I think it's actually real, real close. I think it's real, a real sort of toss-up game, and that was held out by the fact that he won it 2-1, but I ended up with the +4 or +5 on the glory differential. So it was a loss, but it was about as good as a loss can be, I guess. But yeah, it's a good question. I think I think the passive corn scores for that were once you start fighting, it's tough to fall behind. I think if I had to do it again, I was falling into the trap of killing Arnulf or Karsus when they came in. You just get greedy. You see that chance for glory to get your own engine started, but it just gets them that much closer to inspiring, and I can always come back around and kill them. If I can drop Saic, or Karsus, or if I especially can get Garrick before he inspires, then that really reduces what damage output they can do. So,
yeah,
those are my takeaways there. So, losing the first one, I earned myself a match 2 against Kyle with his Molog. And obviously, they Swiss pair, so Kyle lost his first game as well. Super, super nice guy. Really enjoyed this. He was incredibly, I don't know, like I've never seen somebody be able to just like kind of shrug off bad dice as well as he was. He was doing a real good job. In the first game, I held a really bad hand again. I think this is my thing that I wish I'd done better throughout the tournament, but I got lucky. And I think, Kyle kind of misplayed by putting Stalag Squig in a spot where I could take some free shots at him. And so I got the Stalag Squig dead, which got me glory to unlock the rest of my hand. And I ended up killing Molog in the third activation of round 1. Molog was done dead before the first end phase, which is pretty good feeling for me and not for Kyle.
Yeah.
It was Hollow shot him, had Fighter's Ferocity, rolled the crit, so he did 2 damage, pushed Molog back into lethal, and I played trap, so I did 4 damage on that, which also pushed him right next to Grunden, who was able to put on great strength and then ready for action for the kill. So,
oh my god,
that was pretty gross. So it was the third activation, and I'd spent the first one drawing a power card, which is I think what I drew where I drew ready for action from. So, just really 2 there. But kudos to Kyle, and even he was like, I'll just concede, we can be done with this. And I was like, he's like, oh, is that gonna screw you up? I was like, well, I kind of. Makes a difference how much glory I get, which makes you feel like a real terrible person when you're like, yeah, I know you're losing this really bad. I need you to keep losing really bad for a while longer. So, he got to square up the boards. The next one, he got me down to just Alo and Grawl at the very end, which is not a good look. And he'd healed Molog up where Molog was definitely not going to die. Batsquig wandered forward, and good old Grawl with me being, we were pretty close, and I jumped out to what I thought was, going to be a real good lead. I ran Grawl up with, Tome of Offerings and Great Strength, and he bit the Batsquig to death. So I was pretty excited. I was up 16-11. But did not realize, because that first game had gone so lopsided, I didn't see a lot of his deck. And Grawl did not get into his board, and he scored Denial and Protect the Lair. So 5 glory in that end phase, third end phase, tied us up. So I was tied 16-16 on this one, which meant that we had to play a third one. And that third one went, I thought it was going to be great. I managed to set the boards diagonal. And this is where I was talking about with that concerted attack, and I guess I was holding concerted attack in a worthy deed, so I was kind of all in on doing a lot of attacks on Molog, and he got on the healing train with healing potion and great fortitude, and it meant I kept throwing people into range, and he was killing them. I drove him back at a time when I shouldn't have, because it made it all the more awkward for other people to come get him. And in desperation at the end of round 2, Molog had, I think, 4 left, and I managed to run Grunden in, chop him, I got rebounded, but he missed that. So passed that pucker test. And then he activated Soul Trap, which as he had played it on Molog earlier in the game, I had promised him, like, I promise I will forget you have that there. And sure enough, but then he missed that roll. So I thought it was going to be easy street from there because good old Grundon had no damage on him and the Tome of Offerings and three squigs lined up right next to him, including Spite Shroom. You know, they're just kind of all in a line, so I was going to be able to just kind of munch my way through them. And I did not hit anything again, and I got crushing forced by Bat Squig, of all people. So,
oh man,
very very humiliating. It's not I'm not deriding any luck there because I was pretty lucky to drop Molog. And then on top of everything else, I was then too far away to get anybody in his territory, so he scored denial and protect the lair again. And I went from being up 10-9 with nothing but Squigs and Tome of Offerings to just run the score up to losing it 16-10. I never scored another point after that. So huge kudos to Kyle because he could have really thrown in the towel after going down 11-0 in our first game, but he brought it back to a full-on tie. So I was now 0-1-1 with a plus, because I went plus 5 glory on this, so I still had a plus 9 glory differential here. Yeah, so now I was just hoping to get myself above 500 and continuing to disappoint all the people who are hoping.
You had everyone right where you wanted them.
So it was Operation True Submarine. I got to play John next. John brought Skaven. They were a weapon-heavy build, and this is another matchup I hadn't really practiced. But it ended up being interesting because with Skaven, who can bring people back, ended up scoring Concerted Attack by killing a Skaven who was running around with Hero Slayer and kept on trying to pop up to chop me with it. So that was... That ended up being kind of a surprising way. Our first game, I was solidly in the lead, but he had a huge late surge with a Superior Tactician, Master of War, and another objective. So he scored 5, but at the same time, I think I'd scored Keep Chopping or something. So it stayed just barely ahead of him at 16-14. And the second game, it just kind of went real rough for him with dice, and I ran away with it. This is the one where I figured out that, oh yeah, Skaven come back, I can score Concerted off them. So 14-4 on that. I think Tome count came out early enough with a fighter with a lot of accuracy, and it just kind of did it. This was an example of somebody, John had not really played against Godsworn, so I was able to sort of take advantage of that lack of knowledge and surprise him with some inspires and range and all that sort of thing. So expecting, I don't know, I was teched for Magors. I figured I'd run into him at some point, but my next was Joey with the Sepulchral Guard. So that felt good as a matchup, right? Like, I've got speed and I've got combat. So, and that held out. I'd actually practiced some against them. I think you brought them out
once. Just one time.
Yeah, just one time. But it went very much like our practice game. Like, Grundon upgrades, uses his excessive speed and high damage to run in. And one time he's able to trap the Warden and get the kill. And the other time he's able to use... So, well, that was like trapping him against the board. And then another time he's able to use the power card trap. I think I missed and then had to ready for action to get him, but... Warden went down real early both games, and it was just kind of a cleanup. And there's enough guys there that you can skill score pure carnage. So that was a 29 and a 17-7. So that was a real big final round for me. And that is how I closed out with the Godsworn. So it was 2-1-1, which looked a lot better at the end of the day than my 0-1 started. So that was cool. And I think I was on something like a 30 plus 30 glory differential, something in that neighborhood. So pretty good. So that is the Godsworn for you. I guess I give you some final thoughts here. I don't know how to psych. It felt like I needed some non-combat scores in there maybe. I really wanted to hold back a few. Maybe it's just a play style. I wanted to be able to hold back a little more even than I was in the mid rounds. It was a bit of a weird test of it because there was so much in the way of, you know, like, again, I keep talking about having tested against Magor's monologues and that sort of thing. And I saw the one monologues and felt like I didn't do as well as I could have there. But playing against Skaven and Sepulchral Guard was a little bit of a surprise. But even the Skaven were kind of a combat-y one. So I don't know how well this build would do against somebody who's really looking to just sit on objectives or something like that. But it started out as a real heavy shooting build. It kind of drifted away a little bit from them. I'm pretty happy with where it ended up as a balance for that. It felt like it was in most fights. But it did feel like a warband that can run away with it or really just fold hard. So, but I'd be up for trying some more builds in the future, whether it would be, I'd love to experiment a little bit with Magic Thedra. Maybe if we
oh my God.
Yeah. Well,
why do you want to torture yourself, Davey?
Yeah. It does definitely seem like a mistake waiting to happen, but, I was thinking I could bust it out if we're doing a tournament and we need like the ringer, the not very good deck or something like that. I don't know. I just don't get enough games to like spend a lot of energy on what's probably not that great. So, anyway, leave that alone.
So you're talking about like the reasons why you wanted to play them in the first place. Do you feel like that either the deck or the warband as a whole does something better than what some other warband does? Like, does it have its own advantages or disadvantages? Like, once it, you know, you've gone through a tournament now.
Yeah, I think before I started designing, I was thinking like, hey, this is a warband where people don't know what you're doing because you could go a bunch of different ways. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think if you see Godsworn, you can expect that they're almost certainly a combat deck. Like, it's some of the other builds are just rough to make work. I do really like the speed and the range. That's pretty fun. Like having the ability to dictate your engagements is pretty cool. So I think they do that well. And I think the surprise factor, and here I'm not talking about the fact that a lot of people haven't played them. I'm talking about the being able to say like, okay, this guy went from a chump to a hero. You know, Grundon went from doing 2 damage to 4 at, you know, with the application of one very common upgrade of great strength. Like that feels real fun. Like you're looking to see which fighter you're going to transform into the tool that you need to do the job. So,
yeah, I mean, and seeing him from the other side, I think they're so flexible that you can't count any of them out. And it's like, I know I want to kill Alo, but if I go after Alo, then I'm just going to get punked by Shand. And if I go after Shand, I'm just going to get lit up by Jagathra. And it's like, you don't, other than Grawl, you don't have any like easy to kill targets that you won't have to like think about later in the game.
Right.
So that's kind of a nice thing. There's not really a real dangle bro.
Yeah. Other than Grawl, I guess.
Other than Grawl.
But even Grawl, because he inspires to 2 dodge, I would occasionally drop concealed weapon on him, and then all of a sudden he's a speed 5, potentially 3 damage fella.
Yeah.
Then somebody's got to think about taking him out, but he's a pain because now he's 2 dodge and that sort of thing. So I think also weirdly, Grawl ended up with my most frequently receiving Tome of Offerings just by some weird quirk of when that upgrade would drop.
Oh, what a waste.
Not where you want to be, but he got it a couple times, got a couple juicy bites in. So
sweet.
Yep. Well, I think that's going to do it. If you want to get in touch with us, we're at WTHcast, whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Next time, we're going to be talking about Phil's Magors, doing the same thing, kind of a rundown from conception to execution. And if you could, drop us a review on the listener of your choice. The short of it is that it's much more help for us than it is a pain in the butt for you. So, and then
I'm going to use that
great sales pitch.
Yeah. Your recommended listening for this episode is On the Hunt. It's a Lynyrd Skynyrd covered by The Obsessed. You can go check it out. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And this is Aaron.
Present.
Damn it.
Wait. No.
It's very, very faint.
Oh, okay. Can you hear it? I can't hear it anymore.
No one's going to hear it. It'll be fine.
Okay, how about now? Still good?
Yeah, you're good.
All right.
Oh, but wait, no, but I can hear your voice, though. Oh, <man. laughs>